Good evening, everybody. This is Christopher Buck.
Leanne Elize.
With Humanity Healing University, and we welcome you all this evening. We'll be discussing one of the lessons or one of the courses from the Sophia Scrolls. Tonight's lecture will be on the Piscean Initiation.
And Piscean Initiation, it could be noticed in various cultures, but we're going to discuss specifically the registry, the official registry of the Piscean Initiation, which is given to us to the Gospel of John, the disciple that Jesus most loved. And what we're going to do is go step by step on this program and see what is the relevance, what were the expectations, and what is the purpose of the last initiation given by Jesus to his disciples.
So what you have is you have the night of the Last Supper. The disciples have gathered together, and before dinner, before everything happens, Jesus comes up and washes the feet of each of the disciples. And there's a dialogue with Peter where he, you know, Peter is not necessarily comfortable with this, but Jesus reassures and explains that this is necessary.
And the reason being is that, you know, aside of the fact that it is a tradition inside of the Jewish, you know, spirituality, to wash the feet of everybody that came to your house was actually a rule of hospitality. Because most of them use sandals. So it was a rule of hospitality to wash the feet or have a servant wash the feet of your guests. The purpose of the initiation in itself was, the purpose of this ritual for Jesus was initiation. And the reason being is that in the feet, and it is told to be a Piscean initiation because the sign of Pisces, which was also a symbol of Jesus' ministry, the fish, it reigns over, you know, has
dominion over
the part of the body that's related to the feet. The feet, you know, holds a very special chakra, set of chakras, both in the sole of the feet and in the top of the feet. And they have different, vibration and purposes according to the side that they are in. So you have a right feet and the left feet. Both chakras and both feet have a different connotation and function. So in one feet, you are able to you step upon situations and overcoming trying situations. In the other one, you will absorb the trying situations as an experience and transform it. So both of them, you know, what is a common ground of both of them, of both of the chakras of the feet, that they are related to past life. So when Jesus decided, knowing that his time was near, to do a special ceremony to wash the feet of these disciples was much more than one, a sanitary rule, to a guest ritual
just
of
a question
hospitality.
Of hospitality.
It wasn't, because even though in the Bible it says there was not Jesus' house or anybody's house that was related to Jesus where the Last Supper happened. So the purpose basically was to relieve the, you know, and the master can do that. The master can relieve karmic debris. He can, you know, not only extract cords, aka cords, and implants, you know, out of the disciple in order to prepare them to the new path as their own, you know, each one of them in their own ministry. So actually was a extreme valuable gift that he gave to all his disciples before the ceremony of the, you know, transubstantiation. Of course, this is done by a master. It was another occasion in the Bible, and this was not cited on the articles we wrote, but it is a reality. There is another episode in the Bible in itself where you have Mary Magdalene coming in during another, you know, meal time, and she asks to see Jesus, and she brings in very expensive set of essential oils to clean the feet of the master, and she does that with tears of gratitude and also with her hair. And that in this particular episode, Judas, that end up betraying Jesus, says, don't let this woman spend this much oil in your feet. You know, look, the money that she's spending on this will be useful to provide food for those that don't have. And Jesus' answer for him was, poor people will always exist. This body, this master will not exist forever. Let her pay homage to what she has now. As a matter of fact, Mary Magdalene, she was not, as we know, she was not a prostitute that was portrayed in the Bible. She was the sister of Lazarus. And she did this as an, you know, expression of gratitude for Jesus bringing back
Lazarus
from the dead.
Yeah, contrary to what's written or made out of a lot of the Gospels, you know, she wasn't a prostitute. That's kind of something that was added later. She was a very close member, a close friend, and she came from a very well-off and prominent family. And the Lazarus and his family, the Mary Magdalene and her sister, whose name escapes me.
Martha,
thank you. They accompanied Jesus and the entourage throughout the Gospels.
Yes. So this, the ritual of the reverence of the feet or the cleansing of the feet has a deep cultural and esoteric meaning. It means the relief, or in itself a relief of burdens, and it can be translated as a big blessing. So this is the essence of, you know, the Piscean initiation, as we say. There are other aspects that are very important. One of them is the use, and what we say is a Piscean initiation. Well, the era of Jesus was represented by the fishes, and also the fish and the bread, and various parts of the Bible and various parts of the New Testament, you have the reference of the fish and the bread. The fish and the bread astrologically correspond to two opposite constellations. They're opposite, but they're complementary in one way. Pisces and Virgo. The fish and the virgin that holds the crown of the wheat.
The sheaf of wheat.
The wheat, yeah, on her arms. This is the symbol. Virgo essentially incarnates the law of service, the service to others. And Pisces incarnate basically the law of compassion.
And these two constellations are 180 degrees apart in the zodiac and in the sky. Is that not correctly on it?
Yes, they are in the sky. They're diametrically opposite. But they are complementary. And they are the basic symbols of the entire New Testament. And that's the reason you have, after the Sermon of the Mountain, you have an episode with, they say that had like at least 5,000 people, not counting the children. And the disciples saw that crowd following Jesus for 3 days, so they got really concerned. And then they told him, look, there is this amount of people, and we don't have food enough. So what are we going to do? Send them away. You know, just send them away. Because, and Jesus says, oh, you know, how what do we have? And they said, we have two fish and we have five bread. Okay, so he says, bring them here. And what he does is he covered the basket with the fish and the bread, and he says some words, and provides the miracle of multiplication. His only requirement was that the basket wouldn't be uncovered, but that the disciples will pass the basket among the people. And on passing to the people, they were just allowed to put their hands in and take what they needed, but not see it. Of course, this is a expression of a high ritual white magic. And we explained that there's a number related to the, what you call the Metatron's cube, which is the miracle of multiplication of the seed of the flower of life. And it follows the same numerological cadence or progressions that is, you know, related to, at Eastern, to the Pyramid of Giza, to the dimensions of Pyramid of Giza. So the miracle of multiplication was one of a high ritual evocation of white magic based on the flower of life. But, you know, aside of that, what he did was, after they did the miracle and they passed around, they gathered the leftovers, and the leftovers were enough to fill five baskets. So it is a very representative element of the ministry of Christ. Wherever it's needed, it will be fulfilled. You know, he calls himself the bread of life. And whoever eats of his bread or his body will never be thirsty or never be hungry again. Of course, this is a metaphor, and the metaphor continues and ends on the end of his own mass, which is the Last Supper, which is a rudimentary way to express mass, the beginning of the mass ritual. He transformed the bread and the wine into his body and blood. Metaphorically, that's nothing that has, you know, people say, oh, wow, I'm not going to worship a god. There is a vampire that has to give his blood, you know, or people have to eat his flesh. This is a metaphor. What he was referring yet to Christ consciousness. The ones that partakes on the body or in the vibration of Christ consciousness will never be thirsty or hunger, thirst for knowledge or hunger for comfort or hunger for love. So it's a symbolic ritual of communion with all there is. And to do that in this purity and integrity, you will, the disciple or the seeker have to, you know, trespass the threshold through the initiation of the feet, which is relieving and releasing all the reincarnational debris that were accumulated, and they will facilitate their path, you know, the continuation of their path to life.
Think of it as, you can't start a new path until you finish the old one.
So this is basically the entire idea behind the Piscean initiation. You know, it's a ritual. There are other stories that are related to the feet in other traditions. For instance, it is said that the mother of Buddha Queen Maya that had Buddha without the pains of birth, you know, the same way they say that Mother Mary didn't have the pains of birth. But she decided to deliver the baby in the forest. So she walked around. She was a queen, but all her maids came after her. But it was such a blessed birth that everywhere that she stepped, going through a point that she would, you know, deliver the baby, everywhere she stepped, it was, you know, a big flower, flowering in perfumed flower grew immediately. So it was, that was one of the signs that she was about to be give birth of one of the enlightened beings, you know. And so the fact that she steps and her steps is still carrying him, brought blessings to the earth, you know, immediately after, you know, the immediate contact. It's, you know, and it comes from the feet, tells you that there is some mystique that is, that most of us really don't disregard, that's related to our, you know, our feet, and consequently to the minor chakras. They're located right there.
Yeah, there's another interesting aspect about the feet is, and that people, or how important they are. For instance, those that study reflexology, the soles of the feet, the feet themselves, are connected to all the major organs, all the major energy centers of the body, and there are charts in reflexology for how to massage or touch or work with each of these points on the feet to, you know, treat or relieve situations or problems elsewhere in the body. So that's just another example of how our feet are more, or actually more than what most people see them as.
Yes. So, you know, like the chakras of the hand. The chakras of the hand are more connected to the giving. So because they are connected with the higher part of the body, the chakras, they're populate the higher part of the body, but the feet is the connector between our reality, our earth, and our grounding chakras, you know, the three lower chakras, which gives you the coordinates where it's time, space, and, you know, who you are, where you are, and how you are. So this is when, where, and how. So the feet has this very intense relevance. And, you know, on the death of the Christ, if you look at all the wounds of Christ on a moment of the crucifixion, all those wounds was wounds to prevent him, or metaphorically or not, to prevent him to transcend. His hands, which was the hands that healed, got pierced. The feet was the energy that he came to ground, got pierced. The, you know, the crown of thorns were put there basically to prevent the radiance of his stellium to manifest. If it is, you know, was on purpose or not, that when you look at his wounds, you see exactly why the high priest of the, you know, the Jewish religion asked to him to, undergo the crucifixion. It was not only because it was a humiliating death, but it was with the entire purpose that if he had any divinity on himself, the basic points of energy will be completely committed and he will not be able to transcend. So it was not, you know, it was not something, it looks like was orchestrated, it looks like it was something that basically was programmed, because and before that they came to him and said, look, you call yourself the Son of God, and Jesus said, no, I always say that I'm a son of man. So no, you are the Son of God, and Jesus told them to back, you said it, not me. So really the entire scenery, or the entire mise-en-scene, or the entire scene that was programmed, it had a vital element of preventing him to, transcend or ascend or overcome. So this is a process that we lived, in our days. And so, in other words, the ritual and the initiation of Alcyon was actually to lift the crown of thorns that has been put upon us holographically, because he incarnated the energy of the Christ in order to receive again the plenitude of the energy of the Christ, or the Christic energy, or in the energy of Christ consciousness. You have to remove the crown of thorns. On the removing of the crown of thorns, you have the stellium activated. So this is all connected. It is not a coincidental situation. And all of this are part of a major program of not only initiation, but reattunement with the energy of the divine.
Well, I think as humanity, we're coming full circle again. With the crucifixion of Christ, and that cycle started. We've now entered a new cycle, and the same things that have happened. We have to release the shackles that have been placed upon us to prevent us from ascending. And we use that that term loosely, ascending. It's as we grow, we have to, as we grow in spirituality, as we take it within us, the Christ consciousness, that is a means of ascension. It doesn't mean we're all going to suddenly levitate up to heaven.
Well, ascension in itself, it's not the process of, it can happen for certain people in certain levels, but it's not the process of you ceasing to exist in this life. The process of ascension involves ceasing to reincarnate altogether. And even this is a step that has to be planned, because it means that you're done. You're never going to take upon incarnation in human form, or you're never going to take upon incarnation on angelic form. You are going to live as a spirit, can metamorphose, suffer metamorphosis for something else, but never again embodiment. And you see, when you say never again embodiment, it sounds good for us because we're all tired, sick and tired of a body. But in truth, only through embodiment you can experience, and the knowledge and the that you acquire, information that you acquire to embodiment, it's absolutely incredible, and you cannot even compare to the amount, the fastness, the speed, and the amount of information that you will gather for your progress not having an embodiment anymore. The biggest problem is there are embodiments even in fifth dimension, even in sixth dimension, or in seventh dimension. Of course, it's different type of bodies. But in itself, what we are tired is a body in the three dimension. So when people say ascend, oh, I want to ascend, I think I want to ascend too eventually. But more than ascend, I want to be prepared to respond of my next assignment and be disponible, available, open, and ready to take upon assignments, not only in this solar system, but in other solar systems of this galaxy. So this is more than ascension is much more than what is being sold out there.
Well, and a side note here, it's like people will say, you know, what do you want to do? Well, I want to ascend. Okay, why? Ascension itself is not a goal. Ascension is a process. Ascension is a journey. It's not an end state. You aren't suddenly ascended and, hey, it's like, okay, I'm done. I don't have to do anything. Ascension is a matter of raising your vibration. And the reason you do this and the purpose for this is so that you can help others raise theirs. It's not about you. It's not about my own personal ascension. That always makes me grit my teeth when I hear someone say, well, I'm interested in working on my own personal ascension, because ascension is a process and it is a goal, but it is a process and a goal of service. It is so that you will be in a position to help others, because we all raise as humanity or we don't go. It's not just a few chosen people are going to make the cut and everybody else is doomed to, the fiery pit of hell. That's not how it works.
Yeah, and of course, like I said, there are levels of ascension. But right now, everything is packaged and under one label only, you know. But it does involve a lot of detachment, you know, it's like, to ascend right now means, okay, you are absolutely done, no more taking upon experience, and we're going to send you to the third constellation or galaxy in the left, like 5 billion years away. Of course, time and space doesn't exist in the higher dimensions, but, you know, just the grasp of perception is very interesting. But like I said, this is the essence of, you know, the path of enlightenment. It's the journey that matters, is how you perceive. And each one of the experiences, even if they're very painful, they are the experiences that brings a different level of reality, a different level of understanding, not only for yourself or your soul group, you know, but the entire, the entire generation of souls that were created with you. So when we say we all one, you know, the law of one perceives and continues into the infinite. You know, every experience that we gather, we partake and give and expand the energy of Christ consciousness. And that's
that's how we're co-creators. As we expand this consciousness, that we are co-creating, you know, reality. I do want to just step back a second and make a point on something that Lana said when she was talking about, you know, detachment. I just want to emphasize that detachment does not mean removal from the world or removal from things. You don't become attached by hiding yourself on a mountaintop and contemplating, you know, the nature of reality. Detachment is releasing expectation, releasing your constructs on what you want to come out of an experience. We all enter into experiences where we come out of it and say, wow, that wasn't at all what I expected, but it was really amazing. When we treat life this way, when we stop limiting the universe on what it wants to share with us, then we are able to expand and grow as individuals. If I will say, look, I'm only going to go outside today if it's sunny and I get to wear, you know, this outfit, but, you know, it's dirty. You know, I'm going to limit what I can do that day. Detachment is removing yourself, and I'm starting to blither like an idiot here, but detachment is removing yourself from the expectations
of
the results of the situation. What's important is the journey.
Yep. So I think that this is, in a nutshell, everything that, you know, pertains to the ritual of initiation of the feet or the Piscean initiation.
And if you haven't read the articles yet, we've got several articles on the website on the Forgotten Chakras, the feet, part 1 and 2.
They're not, it's not on purpose. It's just because we start writing and they get too big.
Well, we couldn't just have 1 foot. We had to have 2 feet.
Yeah, in this case, we had 6. So, but anyhow, if you have any questions,
all right, we're going to this concludes the lecture part, as we'll say, and we will open this up to any questions that anybody may have. So, please, does anybody have any questions? You know, I can hear the crickets chirping. Is there anybody out there?
Hey, yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Yeah, I have one question. Was Mary Magdalene Jesus' soul counterpart?
Was Mary Magdalene Jesus' soul counterpart? Was that the question?
Yeah.
Okay. There is a lot of information. A lot of this came out of the Da Vinci Code that Jesus and Mary Magdalene, you know, he didn't really, you know, get crucified. They, you know, slipped off together, took a cottage by the sea, raised a family, and eventually it was made into a really good movie with a lot of conspiracy theorists. Is it possible? Yes. What we can say is there is a gospel according to Mary Magdalene. There are texts in the Apocrypha which talk about the relationship of Mary Magdalene with Jesus in a method different from what is in the traditional four Gospels. I believe that Mary Magdalene was one of Jesus' disciples.
Yeah, well, I go further than that. I do believe that they had a relationship. And they had a relationship because, and I believe that the biggest problem that came where the churches afterwards came and, you know, labeled her as a prostitute was because she followed Jesus everywhere as a disciple. And it was not really well seen, a woman and her social status going around with a bunch of walking men in the desert begging for food. It was really not well seen.
And Mary Magdalene was of a good family, but the parts of the Bible where this all becomes included is down the road. It wasn't, you know, there wasn't someone taking notes of what everything was happening at the time and relating to it. You know, the situation with Mary Magdalene, the fact that her gospel was not included in the Bible, this all came during the one of the councils of the church about 300 years after Christ died. And it was at that point in time that there was a lot of heresies that were going on, that the church was trying to define itself. When Jesus passed away, or passed away, he ascended, and the disciples were left there to continue the ministries, they believed that Judgment Day was just around the corner, and a lot of Paul's ministry was basically, guys, look, Judgment Day is here, you know, it's time to pray, do this, forget about families, forget about this, it's here. And then as time passed, you know, his teachings changed because he realized he didn't have the time right, and he there needed to be, you know, how to deal with the family and the continuation of the line. But as the time between when Jesus died and the Judgment Day continued to increase, it became necessary, how are we going to pass these teachings down to the next generation? How are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? And out of that is how the structure of the church grew. Eventually, you had to have people that you could go to as an authority. This is where the bishops came from.
Yeah, but the biggest thing about going back to Mary Magdalene is the understanding that they had a relationship is because Peter, in one of the Apocryphas, it said that Peter gets mad every time that Jesus kissed Mary Magdalene on the lips. This is a fact. But let's go back in time and take a look of the Jewish tradition. Jesus, in many of the Gospels, he's treated as rabbi. He is said to be rabbi. And all the disciples and even the people that stop him in the streets to ask him for healing refer to him as rabbi. Now, Jesus was 30 years old. And initiation and the forming of a rabbi, according to Jewish tradition, it has to be done when a man is ready to marry. He just can receive the holy orders of being a rabbi if he has a family. And the reason being is because the Jewish knew that an uncontrollable sexual energy, you know, it will be adverse for the, you know, the improvement of the spirit. And somebody that didn't have this energy completely organized would not be able to heal, to teach, or to guide anybody else. So we have a very formal and a very strict religion that accepted Jesus as a rabbi. To be a rabbi in that time, which was more strict than it is today, he had to be married. Of course, everybody passes this fact as like, there's no importance. It is. It was the way it was. Like the same time that the woman has a baby in the Jewish tradition, she has 7 days to present herself to the temple to undergo rituals of purification. The mother goes to the ritual purification because they thought that the menstrual blood or the blood that comes after the baby coming,
the afterbirth
blood, was impure. Therefore, she needed a ritual in the, you know, and the lustral bath to be purified again. You know, during that time, the 7 days the woman had delivered a baby, she was not allowed to touch her husband. And after that, she takes a bath. She gives the baby, the baby is given a bath and a blessing from the rabbi, and then after she's purified, she can have her baby back, and she can actually start, you know, even having a laying the same bed that her husband does, and before, that was the tradition. So what makes you think that they would not, in order to give him the title of rabbi, he would not have to undergo the same rules? So he was married.
We believe that essentially Mary Magdalene was a result of a smear campaign after, you know, the church had been established for some time. And when this came up and when the certain gospels were chosen, certain gospels were put down, was during a time when there were various heresies. For instance, there was one heresy which said that, you know, Jesus was a man, but he became God after he was baptized. By John the Baptist. This is Arianism, and it deals with the dual nature of man. Is man just man, or is man God also?
Well, there's other heresies. My favorite one is the one that said that Jesus was actually not born. He was a spirit, but he walked through the body of Mary and became materialized. That's my favorite one. That is my favorite one of all time.
It's what you have is as the church grew and as different political factions took over and started to manage things, the church became more rigid as far as what was acceptable teachings. And as they conformed these things, the fact that you could have, and at that point in time, all the powerful positions were all men. You know, there was and men weren't supposed to marry, or the bishops weren't supposed to marry by that point. At that time, you couldn't have a female bishop. It wasn't right. You know, men couldn't marry, so how could this happen? And the divine feminine started being, you know, pushed out.
Out of the entire story. So it was necessary to take Mary Magdalene, her importance, diminish her importance, the same way that the importance of the Blessed Mother Mary was also diminished. But
the worship of the Blessed Mother Mary didn't really regain foothold until the Middle Ages, and it became such a popular movement with the common people that the church kind of bowed to dictate and made special exception for the Blessed Mother. It was that or lose their followers.
Yes.
But you didn't have something similar with Mary Magdalene that you did with the Blessed Mother.
Yes.
So does that answer your question, or do we really just go off onto a tangent, thoroughly enjoying this topic, and sort of just touch on what you wanted to know?
Both.
Yeah. Well, that's my personal belief that your answer is yes.
Yes.
Well, we could have done that and saved 5 minutes worth of discussion.
5 or 10?
Well, maybe 10. Do you have any other questions? Are there any other questions?
No, I really don't have any other questions besides that.
All right, well then...
Well, I would like to thank you, though, because when you were talking about the whole ascension thing, it was really amazing, because about 3 years ago, I started writing this book, and I had no idea what I was writing. It was like a channel writing. And everything that I had written, I've been having to break down and rewrite into layman's terms so people could understand. And since I've been taking these stellar codes, the information that I have written is, like, coming to life. Like, through my life experiences and, I guess, what Spirit has been teaching me through me, I guess, changing the verbiage so people understand, I've been learning from what I have been written. But since the Stellar Code Attunements have started, my learning has definitely, like, catapulted into the new direction and understanding what has been written. So thank you for that.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you. One of the reasons for that is, as we talk about in the Stellar Code, one of the purposes of the Stellar Code is to build back the personal Anukarana, which is your
channel. Connection
and your channel to your higher self, your soul. And everybody has a connection to their soul. It's called the Sutrama, or the silver cord. It's about the size of your thumb. As we build back the Antakarana, it's also called the Rainbow Bridge. This builds back about the size or the diameter of your head. So, you know, just think of knowledge as water flowing through a hose. Think how much more knowledge and information
understanding.
And understanding, healing energy can flow down from your higher self to your lower self and outwards to all that you connect that, with.
Yes.
When you build back your Anukarana.
Yeah, the problem is not that the information is coming now. The information is always there. The problem is upgrading our level of understanding. As you open your perspective to different points of view, you open the vibration, the possibility to assimilate more. You know, and that's what happened with people that, you know, really tend to limit themselves and have the narrow-minded. They really lose a lot because the world, you know, it's bigger than the street. And, you know, human heart can be as big as the universe, you know, and the understanding is a process of building. Of building levels, you get to a level. So now I understand that, you know, you're not able to understand equations if you don't know how to add or subtract. So you go little by little. It's not that the information is all it's just starting now. The information has been here. The way, you know, how many times you read a book, I don't know if you ever had this experience. You read a book, and you're reading a book, and suddenly you see, you read something that you go back and say, wait a minute, and you don't find it. Have you had this experience?
No.
That you're reading a book, and there's entire paragraphs that you read and said, oh, wow, and then you go back and it's not there? You know, it's the meaning of perception. This is when you break with the limitations of the three-dimensional mind or the intellect, you are even able, through books, to get inside of the essential thought that the author tried to pass to you, but it didn't make it on the cut because, you know, he has to be concise. To pass a message, you have to be explicit, concise, and make it simple, the concepts, in order for people to understand. But then you get things. This is a concrete experience that happens to a lot of people. But many times in our life, in other ways, we have a aha moment. Oh, that's what that meant. Oh, I see. So those are situations that you perceive that knowledge, you know, the eternal divine light that can be translated by all the, you know, the spectrum of experiences, sensorial experience, spiritual experience that we have in our daily lives always been here. There's nothing new under the sun. What is new is the amplification and expansion of our consciousness to the pattern and the build-up of what you call the Christic matrix, which is Christ consciousness. As you go toward this journey to expand yourself to be as big as the consciousness of the Christ light. You know, and I'm not talking about Master Jesus, but he did carry the Christ consciousness. But I'm talking about Christ light, you know, the sun, or the offspring of the, you know, foremost primeval source. So this is where we want to be, you know, and this is what you are having now. You have a little bit more, you know, through the attunements, you got realigned and reattuned to a series of different scales that is easier now to translate because they got decoded. So it's easy to assimilate.
Yes.
You know, that's basically it. It's not that your soul never had it, you know, or you never got it. It's always been there.
You're just now getting...
Yeah, I felt like it was always there in the way it was manifested the way that it did.
Yes.
And it's like a lot of knowledge. You know, wisdom is distilled from knowledge. You know, you might learn something in a book, you know, X equals 3, but it isn't until you study and you learn algebra that you realize why that answer is significant.
And the funny thing is, I've never been a real book reader. I've always wanted to go within to find the answer. I never could really complete a book. I probably read one whole book through my entire life, and then I wrote one.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I know. I love the way that spirit manifests in our life. It's like, you read one, now you make one. God forbid you read 10, and you're going to make 10. Just like, oh, I love it. I love it. Isn't that gracious? I love it.
That's wonderful. Do we have any other questions tonight on, and in particular on the Piscean initiation, but, you know, while we're here, any other questions at all?
No.
To the multitude.
All right. In that case, what we're going to do is we'll go ahead and bring tonight's teleconference to close, and we would like to thank everyone for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tiana. God bless you, and give
God
a kiss to the baby.
Yes.
All right, love. You know, I see you guys later.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.